This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 5:30, more analysis on the Commanders offseason so far, including some guys like Dietrich Wise, Jonathan Jones. How do they fit with the Commanders? But first, let's get some guys like Laremy Tunsil and Brandon Coleman playing right tackle from Mark Bullock, who has a great Substack and is just a really excellent analyst. So we'll talk to Mark first for Not My Beat, and then Logan Paulson coming up at 5:30. But let's get to Mark, shall we?
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Let's get some more insight on some of the Commanders' signings. Mark Bullock, you can read his Substack. It comes with pictures and everything. They're illustrated. It's for everyone. If you want to get smarter about football, you got to read Mark's stuff. He joins us now. Mark, good to see you, my friend. Thanks for joining me.
Of course, anytime.
So let's start off with the offensive line moves, which we get a little bit more insight on today. Multiple reporters saying it within kind of the tweet, the post that Andrew Wiley's contract has been restructured. They're saying, oh, he's going to become the backup, or maybe he can play some guard, but Brandon Coleman's going to become the right tackle for this team in lieu of the Laremy Tunsil trade. What do you make of his ability to play right tackle based off what you saw from him at left tackle last year? Because he did play left guard in college. He did play a little right guard in college, not a ton, but a little. He's actually never played right tackle before, unless he played it some in high school. So what do you think about his ability to potentially make that transition?
I think the potential is there. The raw traits that were there last year to say he could potentially play left tackle still apply now to saying he could play right tackle. He's athletic. He's got quick enough feet that he can handle that part of the game. I think the main issue for him last year was how he dealt with the different techniques, the hand fighting techniques, and he was a little bit. He only really had one or two moves to counter people. He would rely a little bit too much on a two-handed punch, which would see him lunge at people, and that would get him off balance, and the good rushers can take advantage of that. Or it would be he had a nice hand flash technique, but one when guys started to catch on that he was basically one of those two moves, they countered it pretty quickly, and that's why he ended up needing so much help. So with a full off-season now where he can get a lot of work in on learning a little bit more individual hand usage and some more techniques to have in the bank to go to throughout a game, then perhaps he can survive a little bit better at tackle. Because as I say, more often than not, the reasons guys don't survive at tackle is they don't have quick enough feet to handle the speed guys, or they don't have a good arm length to handle the length that you can get outside with those monsters that play on the edge. But he has both of those things. So there's potential for him to fit a right tackle. I do think it could potentially end up being a situation where, like we saw back in, 2015 when Brandon Scherff was drafted. And it was, he's going to be our starting right tackle. And then about two prep days into OTA, it was, okay, he's our right guard now. And Morgan Moses is our right tackle. So that could easily be the situation. I think it's very early in the offseason to say he's definitely going to be the right tackle. But I see the upside in trying him there first and at least seeing if he can survive at tackle. And then if not, you always have the fallback of kicking him inside the guard.
Yeah, because I feel like the other thing that he struggled with at times is kind of just the amount of space that you have to deal with at tackle, where, you know, he had trouble kind of setting on the midline. He'd overset, he'd underset. And you just don't have to deal with that inside because there's not enough space. You're like your physical traits can truly take over, which is why so many people think he can be such a good guard. I guess the question I would ask is, like, left to right, whether it's the quality of rusher, how guys approach rushing a blind side versus a front side. Is there anything about right tackle? Because I think a lot of people just are like, oh, right tackle, it's just the less good tackle for whatever reason. But so many of the same things still apply. And a lot of these rushers now line up on both sides. There are elite pass rushers. TJ Watt typically lines up over the right tackle, for instance. So is there anything about right tackle specifically other than maybe he likes the footwork better? It just suits him better on that side, which we won't know, that gives you any particular hope on that side compared to kicking him inside to guard?
I think it's more just you're a little bit more protected. The team still, like, if he does get beat, you know, Jaden Daniels can at least has a better peripheral vision of his right side compared to his blind side. So that would be the where I feel a little bit more secure in trying him out there than left tackle. And I think given that they have Laremy Tunsil a left tackle now and they can trust him on an island, I think they can still provide the help that Coleman got a lot last year with the extra chip help or sliding the line his way. And he did well with that help. And I mean, a lot of tackles probably would do well with that level of help that he got. But the issue for them last year was they had Wiley and Coleman both needing that level of help. And that meant that they only had three receivers running routes most of the time. And the other guys were chipping and going to the flat. So by getting Tunsil, you free up one of those chippers to go and run an actual route. So you get four receivers out running routes. And you can still keep someone in to chip, or and you can still slide the line to just one side to help out Coleman on the right side. So I think they have some protection built into him playing right tackle because they have Tunsil that they can trust on the left side. So, yeah, the biggest question is going to be, can he adjust to doing everything backwards, where coming out of his stance the wrong way effectively compared to what he's been doing? And maybe he struggles with that. Maybe it all clicks a little bit better for him. Who knows? But I think in terms of technique and stuff, it's not too dissimilar. It's just the blind side effect of it is, you know, Jaden's pretty aware of those things coming off his blind side, but you'd still would rather him have that vision of it and being able to see that guy coming a little bit better. And we saw that a couple times last year. I'm thinking of that touchdown to win the Bengals game where he slid the protection to his left and let the free rusher come off his right side because he could see that better, and then threw the touchdown to Terry over the top of it. So that's the kind of thing you're looking for, is for him to just be able to have that a little bit more awareness on the right side of if a blown block happens.
Mark Bullock, you can read his Substack, of course, formerly worked for the Washington Post and The Athletic, now does a great job with doing his own thing with the Substack, and he's got all kinds of diagrams, and you know, I feel like I'm explaining things in a very silly way. I don't know what better way to do diagrams. He's got play designs. He's got, you know, cut-ups, drawings.
All 22
cut-ups. That's the word I'm looking for, Mark. Cut-up. He's got film cut-ups. That's the football term. Got him in the middle of the offseason. Ask me about a signing bonus. I can do your math for you. Ask me to watch tape, and I'm out of my realm. All of a sudden, you have watched the tape on Laremy Tunsil, though. There's a lot of yapping about Laremy Tunsil and what happened in Houston last year. When you flip on the tape and do your cut-ups, what do we see from Laremy Tunsil, the football player, going into his age 31, 32 season?
Really good, really, really good.
Excellent. All right, yeah, that's what we've been waiting to hear.
Yeah, that's top quality analysis there. He is really fun to watch. He's so smooth and so efficient with his feet. There's no wasted movement. He's not. He doesn't have these big overstrides and these kicks, massive kick slides. It's just very smooth and efficient, quickly up and down. He gets a lot of width and a lot of depth on his drops very easily. And because of that, he can cut off just about any speed rusher, and he knows that he can cut off any speed rusher. So he also uses that to his advantage to help the left guard quite a lot. There was quite a few examples last season where whoever was playing left guard, and they rotated guys a lot in Houston because that O-line was terrible. But he would quite often, you'd quite often see him holding his spot next to the guard, pointing out a linebacker blitzing as the play was happening, and he'd stick out a hand and secure that B gap to help the guard help get the block secure before he could then just transition outside and pick up the edge rusher, because he knows he has quick enough feet. But it's not just the good feet. He's got great hands, good hand placement, good hand technique as well. Always has. We talked about Coleman having that kind of relying on that two-handed punch. Tunsil is very good with individual hand usage. You always see him. He'll strike with his outside hand, but he's always got his inside hand ready to replace it if that outside hand gets knocked down. And because of that, he's always really well balanced and just very, very hard to get by. And that makes him a very, very good pass protector. And I think
what about the run game, though? Because that's the other area with him where it's like, it's not, he, we know he's an elite pass protector, if not the best one in football. Where's the run game blocking out for him? Where are the strengths? Where are the weaknesses?
I think it's better than people think it is. People make out that he's this elite pass protector and terrible run blocker. He's not a terrible run blocker. He's very athletic in the run game. And the Texans last year had Bobby Slowick as their OC, and that comes from that Shanahan tree, that wide zone run scheme. And he was really good. Like he could cut off the backside three tech very easily. He could climb up to the backside linebacker on the backside of runs and cut those guys off as well, which you don't see a lot of. You see guys like Trent Williams doing it, but you don't see most normal left tackles.
That's such a funny phrase. Guys like Trent Williams. You see Trent Williams do it. There's nobody else like Trent Williams. He's one of one.
Yeah, that's true. But you see the elite guys do it, but you don't. He makes it look so easy because, again, he's such a smooth, fluid athlete. He's really athletic. Now, the one thing you didn't see him do too often was pull. And obviously in this offense, they run a lot of that GT counter where both the guard and the tackle pull. And so we didn't see how he did that, but you could see a lot of him blocking on screens where they'd run those quick screens to the flat or those running back screens. And Tunsil was often the guy trying to get out in front of them. And the Texans often actually did some of those rare screens that Kyle used to ask Trent to do, where they'd fake a run to the right side and they'd have Trent run from the hash marks all the way out to the numbers to make a block on the edge to block the corner on a receiver screen. And Tunsil did the exact same thing. I saw him do that in one game as well. So he's a pretty good athlete, and I think he shouldn't have any issues doing any of the pull stuff. So I think he'll be a pretty good fit. Again, you do have to – there is some projection in terms of how they're going to run because they tend to run more gap-based run schemes. So there is a little bit of projection there, but I don't see any reason why he couldn't do it. He's big enough. He's powerful enough. He's quick enough and athletic enough. So I don't see any reason why he'd have any issues in the run game either.
Mark Bullock with us here on the Hoffman Show, Commanders analyst who has a great Substack. Just markbullock.substack.com if you want to check it out. So you also watched the tape on Javon Kinlaw, who is a very interesting player, super high upside. Clearly, the people that have been around him love the guy. You know, Adam brings him back. Robert Saleh had him in New York after coaching him in San Francisco. Daryl Tapp was with him in San Francisco as the assistant D-line coach. He brings him here along with Adam to now that DT is the D-line coach here. So the character seems really high, which seems like a common thread throughout these guys. But when you look at the player, and you hear Dan Quinn saying in offseason stuff, like, we might look at some guys that we see in different roles than they've played. Is Javon Kinlaw kind of guy that you think fits that mold, and that you could take the traits that you see on film and transfer it more effectively to another role or another position within what the Commanders showed last year that they want to do with their D-line?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of people have started to catch on to this idea of playing him as that kind of heavy defensive end, or some people are calling it the elephant end.
Going back to what Pete Carroll and them called it in Seattle back in the day.
Yeah. And I certainly could see him doing that. I do wonder if he'd be disciplined enough on the edge to do that. I think that was one of the big things I took away, was there was a bit of a discipline issue in terms of keeping his gap. The thing with him is that he's so big, so athletic, so quick, and so strong that if everything clicks, he just runs guys over and turns up in the backfield and makes this amazing play. But if things don't click, he ends up getting washed out of gaps very easily. And for most of his career, it's been a case of things haven't clicked very well for him. And so he ends up getting knocked out of his gap more often than not. Last year, he was getting more consistent. So I think they'll need to help with some technique stuff because he's so big and so strong, there was a couple of double teams that Buffalo ran on him. And Buffalo have a big offensive line. They have that guard, Osiris Torrance, that's like 350 pounds. And they were double teaming with Torrance and the right tackle on him. And he just kind of stood upright, which you don't teach guys to do. You want them to stay low and pad level and try to attack the block and split the double team. And Kinlaw just kind of stood upright and was like, you guys can't move me. I'm too strong. And he just held the point of attack. And it's like, that's insane that he's able to do that. I'd love to see him do that consistently, and he doesn't. But it shows that there is a player in there. And I think the big thing with him is that Dan Quinn and Adam Peters have always talked about finding a guy's superpower and letting them do that thing over and over again. And I think that's what they're hoping to be able to do with Kinlaw, is take away all the other stuff of, can you do this? Can you do that? We need to fix this and fix that. It's okay. You are a big, strong, physical and fast human being. Let's let you do that as often as we can. And let's let you be disruptive. Whether that's as this heavy end, elephant end, whatever you want to call it, I'm not sure. I'm not necessarily convinced of that. I kind of wonder whether last year they kind of did it a bit with Johnny Newton when they did those three-man fronts with Allen, Payne, and Newton. They put Newton at nose tackle, and they used his quickness to beat those centers inside. The Jets kind of did that with Kinlaw at times last year, where they played him as a one technique, as a nose tackle, and his power and his length was just too strong for any center to handle, and he could dominate centers that way. So I kind of wonder if maybe the answer is they kick him more inside rather than out to the edge. But I think they have that flexibility where you have those three-man fronts with Payne, Newton, and Kinlaw now, where you probably have Armstrong as one edge, and then if you want to, you can slide the line across and you can bring Luvu down as the other edge and kind of have it as a fake five-man front. Or you can just have one of those guys play as kind of heavy end, as we talked about. And so I think it gives them some flexibility to do a lot of things with that defensive line. So the contract was maybe more expensive than you would think. And I don't love that contract for what he has been, but I think they're paying for what they think is an ascending player and one that they think they can get more out of.
If a dude's going to play 600 snaps at defensive tackle, like that's what they cost now. It's crazy because the cap has gone up, but it should be what they cost. But then again, considering what he's been, I do wonder if how much of a market there really was. But it takes one other team to drive up a market. That's all you need. And Adam Peters clearly thought it was worth it. And based off the other money that they have available, it's not hurting them. So I don't mind it. I think that also a point that should be raised here. Then I want to ask you about Will Harris as the last guy that we'll talk about. But with Dietrich Wise coming in and Eddie Goldman coming in, two other bigger bodies for their position, like it does feel like they are planning to have a lot more versatility. Like they have options to play basically every kind of front. Now with Goldman as a guy who can play a true nose tackle, a true shade, Kinlaw is this faster, twitchier version of that. Like, so there's some interesting options that are going to be really fun that I'm sure you'll be spending plenty of time writing about if they come to fruition during the season. Last guy is Will Harris, who as of right now is going to be the starting safety opposite of Quan Martin, replaces Jeremy Chinn. Really interesting player. Speaking of versatility, super versatile, lines up everywhere. What do you like about him? What are the concern points for a guy that played pretty darn well in New Orleans last year?
Yeah, that versatility really stands out. I put a post up on my Substack this morning or Thursday morning at the time of recording that there was a three-play sequence in Dallas where against the Cowboys this past season, where at one point he lined up as the deep safety and he broke up a pass on it. Everyone's probably seen that highlight where he runs from the middle of the field and he hits CD Lamb in the end zone and on the sideline on a fade and breaks up that pass. Another play, he's playing over the slot and covers CD Lamb on a corner route. It's kind of a 4/3 coverage, so it's not true man coverage, but he matches up on Lamb in the end and covers him on a corner route really well, playing the slot. And then later on, he's playing as a dime linebacker in the box and matches a tight end running up the seam. So he can do a lot. He can line up in a lot of different roles. He can wear a lot of different hats, kind of like how they envisioned with Jeremy Chinn last year. And Chinn didn't end up playing all the roles that I think they would have liked because they ended up having to play him a little bit more deep to kind of cover the corners a little bit at the start of the year. But they started to get towards that more down the stretch and Chinn started playing a little bit better. And I think they will probably try to slot him in that role. I think the thing that he, in my opinion, does best is match up against tight ends, whether it's kind of match coverages or man-to-man straight up. He does a pretty good job staying with tight ends. Now, he does get beat from time to time. Zach Ertz got him on a third down against the Saints late in the red zone last year, running one of those little quick seams, breaking inside. Zach Ertz got him on that, but he generally speaking does pretty well. And if you're going to play a lot of man coverage, you need a guy that can match up on tight ends. So I think that's kind of where they'll see him. He fits the run pretty well. If you're going to have a safety down the box matching tight ends or playing dime linebacker matching running backs, you need to be able to play the run. He plays that pretty well. The biggest concern I have on him is he tends to struggle with misdirection. And a play I broke down on my Substack in that post this morning was it was against the Packers. They ran a jet sweep at him, and they ran quite a few jet sweeps at him in that game. And he was part of a two deep safety look, and they ran the sweep to his side. And he ended up charging down to the box because he still thought it was a run play. And the only reason he stopped, the receiver had already got out towards the numbers from the jet sweep. So he was almost at the sideline, and Harris was still charging towards the line of scrimmage thinking it was a run inside. And the only reason he stopped was because the corner that was trailing the receiver on the jet sweep ran straight across his face, and he realized, oh, that ball's not in the backfield. It's way out there. And they nearly gave up a touchdown because of it. The corner managed to save it at the one, but they still picked up like 20 yards on that play. And they ran quite a few of those jet sweeps at him because he was not great when he was playing from deep, diagnosing those misdirection plays. And that came up quite a few times that I watched him. And so that was the one weakness. I wouldn't necessarily love him playing deep all the time. I think in obvious passing situations, he can handle coverage back there fine. It's when you have the misdirection of, is it a run, is it a pass, play action kind of thing on first and second down. And Washington did do that a fair few times last year where they played with two deep safeties and then they rotate one down at the snap. So that is maybe a little concern, but perhaps there's another safety signing or draft pick that could fit in and Harris plays more of a dime linebacker role. I'm sure we'll see as this offseason evolves. I don't think they're done yet by any means, but
say, you mean that they're allowed to still sign players?
Here we are day after the
league year opens. Draft is still whatever away. The team's not done yet. That totally makes sense. And I think they did a really good job. Logan and I were texting about this the other day, and he made this point. So good. Paulson guy, smart. They did a good job of packaging their safety stuff. And so whether it was Butler or Chinn or Kwan or whatever other versions of the DB combinations they saw last year, definitely very interesting to see what they do this year. And like Dominic Hampton's still floating around, like what is his role? So Jordan McGee, what's his role when you talk about the box players? So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how they put it all together. Mark will be writing about all of it at markbullock.substack.com. You can, again, go watch all the film cut-ups of him breaking down these guys in their previous spots and how he thinks they'll fit in beyond what he just said. He's going to watch a little bit more film here, too, and guys like Dierdrick Wise, who I think could actually be a much bigger part. That's kind of an underrated signing. Like, I think he's going to be a pretty heavy rotation player for them. It's really good in New England last year. Mark's going to write about those guys over the next couple of days as well, Jonathan Jones, etc. Mark, appreciate your time on the radio here, my friend. Take care and talk to you soon.
Of course, anytime.
It's Mark Bullock with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back, more analysis from more smart people. Logan and I had a nice little chat this morning on Take Command. We actually did a live show, but if you're just getting in your car now, chances are you were stuck at your desk and missed it. So we're gonna play it for you, at least part of it. The rest you can check out in the podcast feed. But we're gonna give you some of Logan's breakdowns on Dietrich Wise, Jonathan Jones, and why he's very high on the players that Washington has brought in next.